Yeah, yeah, this is good.
Yeah? We're good.
Man hat gehört, mehrere Mal nach Reine. Und befragt in der letzten Zeit. Das ist der Sikh of Shabbos Parshas Vayesha, the 23rd of Kislev, Shabbos Mevarchem Tevis, Tavshin and Beis. The Rebbe starts off that we have spoken many times in the recent past, especially in the most recent past, as late Alas Simonim is unser der, der letzte der von Golos, und bemele der erste der von Gul. And our generation is the last generation of exile, and therefore, by default, the first generation of redemption. Because we have completed all the matters of our divine service in this world that we had to accomplish. And therefore we are already standing at the ready. We are already prepared for the true and complete redemption. Through our righteous Mashiach, take it from Miyad Mamish, immediately. Fragen andere. So there are others that raise the following question. Die Geula ist doch toll in dem, als die ganze Welt soll dazu sein zugegriffen. That redemption is contingent on that the entire world should be ready. Nicht nur ein Mensch, oder etliche Menschen. Not only one individual or a number of individuals, a number of people. Nicht nur ein Teil von der Welt, not only one section, one part of the world, nor der ganze Welt. But the entire world has to be ready. Warum die Geula ist verbunden und tolle, in Kibbutz Nidche Yisrael, mit Arbe Kambis Oretz, because redemption is connected with and contingent upon the ingathering of the dispersed of Israel from the four corners of the earth, und euch in dem Bierer von Umisa Elam b'chol Aratz, but also in the refinement of all the nations of the world in all the lands. Wo zet man, fragt man. Where does one see, these people ask, Ashina in der Welt, a change in the world, as die Welt ist itz dem Erz zugegräht zu der Geula wie in die Friede Gederes. How do we see a change in the world which would demonstrate, which would indicate that the world is currently more ready for redemption than in earlier generations? Very good question. Wird man das verstehen? Doch früher mag dem sein dem Tam auf der Klaus der Gestaltschluss Hamasois von Iden in Golos mit Mokum Lomok. In order to understand and appreciate what the Jewish people have accomplished in the world, and in what way the world has been impacted and the world has actually changed and is therefore ready for redemption, we first have to understand what is the reason for the general progression of travels of the Jewish people in exile from place to place. What was the point of this wandering in exile? AFLP was die voneinander Spreitung von Eden in die verschiedenen Medinas Elam. Befuzer und Meferet Beine Amen, his Bechitzenius Ayurida. Even though the disbursement of the Jews in the various countries of the world, as it says in the Megillah, they are spread out and separated amongst the nations, even though externally that is a descent, in other words, externally, the way viewed from our perspective, that is a negative experience. That's a what we would call a bad thing. Und was mehr der Pieser als Grasse dürft, and the greater the disbursement, okay, the greater the descent, the greater, the more bad the situation is. Sagen Chazal. So our sages tell us. As tzedakah as HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael shepizra mebeinu umos. It's an act of kindness, it's an act of charity that God has done to the Jewish people, that he dispersed them amongst the nations. What does it mean that it's an act of charity? Now the literal meaning of that statement is that if they get killed in one country, so they survive, there are survivors in the other country. So because part of their exile is not only that they're spread around, part of their exile is that they also get persecuted, And they sometimes get toasted or fried or other various forms of annihilation. So the fact that it's a kindness that God spread them around, that while they're being killed in one place, there are survivors in another place. That is the most literal explanation for this statement of our sages. The Yodua, it is known, that Pirush HaPnimi in them, the deeper significance, the deeper meaning of this statement, as das ist zu lieb die Meile, was kommt durch der Avede von Iden b'chol Matem Umak. In other words, externally, when we say that it's a kindness that God spread the Jewish people amongst the nations, it's because for the material preservation of the Jewish people, it serves them the fact that while they're being hounded and persecuted in one country, they can survive and rebuild in another country. The deeper significance, the spiritual significance of this kindness is that they actually, it enables them to fulfill their divine mission in this world. Because the point of being spread amongst all the various nations is in order to facilitate, to bring out the quality which is accomplished through the work of the Jewish people in this world. That they settle in a foreign country. They don't just pass through it. Something clear? They don't just pass through it, but they actually settle in and become citizens of a foreign land. They become enclosed, so to speak. They actually adjust to, in manners which are permissible according to halacha, to the customs of the place and that country. Okay, they become acclimated and acculturated. In fact, they often will use the language of their host country, at least in worldly matters, in their worldly affairs. They will use the language of the host country. Each place, they will adopt the various behaviors and customs of the place, each place according to its character, based on the character of the place and the character of the people of that place. As the words of Chazal, if you go to a city, conduct yourself in its ways, in its mannerisms. Adopt the mannerisms of the place and the manners of the place in which you find yourself. So that is why in every country you have the differences between Russian Jews and German Jews and English Jews and American Jews, because each Jew, even when they're all, and Yemenite Jews, even though when you're talking about Jews that are all living according to halacha, according to all the standards of Jewish law, and yet there are differences because they adopt the customs and the cultures and the speech patterns and certain behaviorisms of the place that they find themselves in. Not only does it say that one should take on the customs of the place one is in, but this is actually a law. In other words, it is actually a divine mandate. Bizvi der din is, that the halacha, the law is, as the Rambam says in his Laws of Sales, ze ikr gadol b'chol divrei masa umatn helchen achaloshim b'nei odom b'eisa amokim achara minik. And again, ha ikr gadol b'dvarim elu hu minik ha-medina. That when it comes to law, even Jewish law, when we talk about laws of commerce, Jewish law decides based on the custom of each place. In other words, in each place, when a person says, I'll sell you a house, so in each place, in some places when he says, I'll sell you the house, that means, and he writes in the deed that I'm selling you the house, In some places, the custom is when you sell a house, it automatically is assumed that you're including the front yard and the backyard and the driveway and the garage. There's other places that if you only write house and you don't specify that you're including the yards and the, so then all you get is the house. If that's what it says in the deed, each place has their customs. Each place has their way of doing business. And the law is, the way we judge the laws of sales is based on what is the way of speaking, how people speak and how people conduct themselves in business in each place. So it's actually the customs of a place actually have impact on Jewish law when it comes to commercial matters. So the Minhagei HaMedina von Umas HaElam, which means that Jewish law is affected by the customs of the of a country, of the nations of the world. How the guy, how the non-Jews conduct themselves will impact and affect the laws of the Torah. Who are the majority of the inhabitants of these various countries outside Eretz Yisrael. So what is the point of all this? What is the point of settling into all of these countries and becoming a part of these countries to the point that even our laws are affected by our being in these countries? We adopt these customs and behaviors and only in order to utilize these customs to serve God. All your actions should be for the sake of heaven. In all your ways shall you know Him. Till the point that you should that we utilize these customs not only for the sake of heaven, but to add an increase in Torah mitzvahs. Ubeloshen achasidus. Vebir maimer chazal. Vehigla kadosh baruch hu etz Yisrael beino umas ela kidei shiteisu aleihem gerim. In the terminology of Chassidus, in the explanation of a different statement of Chazal, which says that God did not exile the Jewish people amongst the nations except in order that there should be added onto them converts. Okay, now we have a rule in Talmudic language that when it says he did not, loy ella, he did not do this except. He did not do this, except for that. That means this is the exclusive reason. Okay? So the exclusive reason, I would say this to us, the exclusive reason that God exiled the Jewish people amongst the nations was for the sake of the addition of converts. So Chassidus explains that if you count the amount of converts that were made in 2,000 years of misery and suffering and tragedy, it's a very small number of people. And it would seem to be a bit, and not only that, we even find amongst the Ishmaelites, there's almost no converts. Amongst the Arab nations, the level of converts is close to nil. And even amongst the Western nations, where there are more, and also among Eastern peoples, amongst the Western nations, where there are more converts, but still, it's a very, very small amount of converts to say that that is the exclusive reason for exile. So Chassidus explains, as Gerim is Meramis, und geht auf die Nitzutze Kedusha, welche gefinden sich bechol in Yoni El. Gerim, converts, does not necessarily refer to specifically individuals who actually adopt the Jewish religion, but converts refers to those sparks of holiness which are found dispersed in all worldly matters. Everything in the world contains within it a spark of the divine. Und das was higla kadosh baruch es Yisrael in verschiedene mekemes be'elam, and this that God exiled the Jewish people in various places in the world, is b'chidei zu mevarer u'mezachich u'mayla zayin di nitzutzes veloche gefinnen sich in yanam art. The reason why he exiled them to these various places is so that they should separate out, refine, and elevate those sparks which are to be found in that place. So we're not talking about converts human converts per se. We're talking about converting various elements of all the elements of existence which contain within it a godly spark, converting it to the realm of holiness, elevating the divine and bringing out, developing and bringing out the divine potential which exists in all things in all places. And that is why Jews had to be spread in all places, even in places where they did not necessarily produce any actual human converts. And the Rebbe Tzedakah Asa Kadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael Shepizran Lebein Ovis. And therefore, that is the true, deeper understanding of the statement that it is charity, it is an act of kindness that God did to the Jewish people, that He dispersed them amongst the nations. Al Durchtam Kuntzu Dimaila from Zer Aveda Bebirur Hanitzutze Kedusha El Gefirin Zich Indim and Hagim B'chol Medina Medina B'chol Makim Makim. Because it is through this dispersement that the Jewish people acquire this additional quality, which they reach the peak and the pinnacle of their fulfillment of their mission in sifting out the sparks of holiness which are found in each and every country, in each and every place, and also within the customs of each and every country, in each and every place. Everything that exists has in it a spark, which is its potential for holiness, and it is the job of the Jew. The sifting out of that spark means developing that potential for holiness and utilizing it for the sake of holiness. Der Fun ist moven, die Meile in dem, was Iden werden voneinander gesprägt und übersetzen sich in mehrere verschiedene Medinas bei Eul. And this is understood, the advantage of the fact that Jews are dispersed and they settle in many various different countries in the world, bis be'efen von ufaratzta yama v'kedma v'tzofeinu v'negba kibirchus HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'yankiv, till the point that it can be described as spreading forth east, west, north and south, as described in the blessings of God to Yaakov, to Jacob, that He says, you shall burst forth eastward, westward, northward, and southward. Al davke duch der aveda von Eden, b'chol medinas ha'elam. But it is specifically through the service, through the work of the Jewish people in all the nations of the world. Ve'evim von shel eslabshus pnimis b'chol makam l'fi inyonei, in a manner that they're not just simply passing through, but that they actually enclose themselves in a deep way. They really become part of the place to the point that they identify with the place. Okay, it's not that they're at a remove and at a distance and they're just passing through, but it's in eifen of a slavshus pnimis, durch sich besetzen und leben in dem Land, through settling and living in that land, in that country, und sich eifern bin yarem ha-mutarim leit min hagi ha-medina, and through conducting oneself in permissible matters according to the customs of the land. In other words, obviously each land, since we're talking about non-Jews, we're talking about the nations of the world, obviously there's a great deal of their customs and behaviors which are immoral and not permissible, and certainly those things we are not intended to adopt and to take on. It is only those things which are in the realm of the permissible. Can I eat Eifton Dembir Vizich Beifen Shem Mumato Lumaila for Kalmakim Vimakim Lufi Inyonihu? It's possible for a Jew to accomplish the sifting and refinement in a manner of going from the bottom up, in each of each and every place according to its characteristics, Azaz is very adirul is barach betachtenim, to the point that the world becomes a dwelling for God in the nether realms, in the lowly realms. Tachtenim lashon rabin doesn't say that God wanted a dwelling in the low. It said lowly realm, but rather lowly realms, plural. Like the other tachton umakim begidrehu, that God, everything according to its innate lowly characteristics, each according to its own characteristics and its own defining its own defining features should be a common dwelling place for God. As opposed to if one is only there in a temporary manner, passing through, or one tries to influence on a place from another place, one cannot accomplish there in the same way as when one actually lives there in an established and settled way, and one is completely familiar with the customs of the place. So what is this refining and elevating a place no mato l'mayla? Transforming a place from the bottom up. And since there are many different lowly places, so each one is coming from the bottom up according to its characteristics. What is the definition of this concept of refining, elevating the world from the bottom up, as opposed to elevating the world from the top down? The basic, just a very basic outline, the concept of elevating the refining people from the top down is using the classic example of a person who enters into the presence of the king. A person enters into the presence of the king, and the presence of the king is completely overwhelmed by the grandeur and majesty and greatness of the king. And in the presence of the king, the person becomes completely, he's completely overwhelmed by the king's greatness and completely nullified and is completely subservient to the king at that time. What happens because he's overwhelmed by the presence of the king? What happens when he leaves the king's presence? So the power, the intensity of that experience diminishes with time, and it's likely that a little while later, not only will he not be overwhelmed by the majesty of the king, but he might end up doing something against the king. Because even though he was affected by the greatness of the king, but it was in a way that he didn't change. He never really changed. He was the same person. Just at the time that he was experiencing that overwhelming experience, he experienced something which is higher than himself, and therefore it impacted on him in that way. But when that higher power was removed from his life, so he reverted back to being what he always was. So you can sometimes affect changes on people from above, but it's when a change comes from above, it's primarily behavioral and not internally, it's not an internal transformation. It can be very powerful, it can be very intense, and it could have very immediate results, but it does not affect an inner transformation. The person on the inside remains the same. However, if you take a person and you sit down with that same person and he spends time every day studying and learning about the greatness of the king, and with time he gets a greater and greater appreciation and understanding of who the king is and what the king is about and how important the king is. So the more he develops an appreciation and understanding for the greatness of the king, the more a command of the king means to him. But now that he's coming to it from a place where, from his own insight, from his own appreciation, his own understanding, now when he gets a command from the king, he understands what is a king, who is a king, where it's coming from. So even without his subservience to the king comes from within himself, from his own appreciation and understanding for the greatness of the king. Not because he was just blown away by the presence of the king, but when the king goes away, he reverts back to being himself. The same thing most people could probably relate easier, since we don't deal with kings too often, and most of the people who call themselves leaders today are people who barely command a minimal amount of respect from us, so it's hard for us to really relate to. But people can understand the same concept with little children and their teacher. The teacher steps out of the room and the kids are running all around the room, and they're basically making a ruckus, and as soon as the teacher walks in, the kids all run back to the seats and they sit quiet. Okay? Why are they sitting quiet? Because there's a certain amount of respect or fear that they have for the teacher. While the teacher is present, they're going to behave a certain way. But even though they might sit hours a day behaving like angels in the presence of the teacher, they have not become angels. They haven't really changed. Because as soon as the teacher walks away, as soon as they're no longer in the presence of the teacher, they will revert to behaving like wild animals. So they haven't become angels. They adopted the behavior of angels in the presence of the teacher, but they haven't really changed. So the transformation, the behavioral change is immediate, it could be immediate and total. When, you know, it's from one extreme to the next. When a person is overwhelmed from above, so the transformation is much more complete in terms of the behavioral change is much more extreme, from one extreme to the other, but the inner change didn't really take place. When a person, on the other hand, who you sit down with that same child and you teach them and explain to them, and they learn daily, a little bit at a time, to understand and develop an appreciation for proper behavior. So even though this is a long, protracted process of change, and this long, protracted process of change, the change is made in small increments, but the change is made from within. The child himself is maturing and changing, and his behavior is changing from within, not from above. So change from above down, it would be like the teacher walking in and all of a sudden, poof, the same kids who are hanging off the ceilings are sitting like angels. That's change from the top down. There's a higher authority has imposed the change. So the change is much more intense and complete, but it's not internalized. However, the changing from down upward, from bottom up, means slowly but surely learning and developing and growing and maturing. So even though the changes are in smaller increments and in smaller bits and pieces, but ultimately the change is a more lasting and permanent change. That the person himself has become transformed. He's now a different person. So the same thing in relation to the world. Our job in the world was, when God came down on Mount Sinai, the world was overwhelmed. God revealed himself on the mountain and blew the world away. And everything in the world stopped, stood still. The birds didn't chirp, and the animals didn't make noise, and everything stood silent, and the waters didn't move, and everything was like stood still. Everything was affected, everything was impacted. But the effect of the change was that as soon as the revelation stopped, the world reverted back to its old state. Since then, it's been the job of the Jewish people to change the world from the bottom up, which is that the world itself should become a godly place. Not that the world, when God reveals himself, the world will then fall into line, but that the world itself should become a godly place, a place that is hospitable to God. That is through the process of utilizing every aspect of the material existence and every aspect of each and every place and its individual specific characteristics and customs to take those things and utilize them in the service of God. This is what elevates them to the state that they become. It enables them to be transformed from within, from the bottom up.
You're talking about going into the world and elevating it from the bottom up. So sometimes you'll talk to a person and you have whole societies from Yidden that are removed from the world, and like half their community is in Kollel, or more than half. And they say that that is a way of life, Alpi Torah. So the question is, if the Torah, if the Eibishter wants this to be the process in Golus, why didn't he command us to do it instead of giving us an option to be removed from the world and sit in Kola?
He certainly commanded us to do it. In fact, the Talmud says very clearly that that this way of life, the way of life, meaning of putting aside all worldly concerns and devoting oneself exclusively to the study of Torah, is a way of life that's reserved for singular individuals and is not a way of life for the masses. The Gemara, the Talmud says that very clearly. And this is the way it's brought in Jewish law. What happens is that in which they themselves will admit, those that are learned, those that are ignorant don't know, but those that are learned will admit that it is a deviation from traditional Jewish custom to have such large percentages of people sitting full-time, engaged in full-time study and removed from the world. They'll say the reason why we have to make this deviation was because of the terrible spiritual decline in the world. So we have to run away from dealing with the world because the world has gotten too low to deal with, and therefore we have to run away from it and hide out in the study halls. But it's a deviation, and it's based on a misunderstanding of what our job in this world is. The reason why the Talmud states unequivocally that the way of living a life of being totally exclusively involved in Torah study and not involved in worldly affairs is only for singular individuals, and in fact the individual who represents that lifestyle, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, in the Talmud, in the Gemara, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is the one who is the prototype of the individual whose sole occupation is study of Torah. It's the same Rav Shimon Bar Yochai that says that the verse which says 6 days a week shall you work is a commandment. It's Rav Shimon Bar Yochai that says that 6 days a week shall you work, that you do work, is a commandment. It's not an option. It's not just you can do work. It's a commandment. You're obligated to do work. So it's that working and dealing with the physical world is an obligation, is a divine mission. And as the world gets lower, is because we're supposed to elevate and refine more latent and more concealed divine potential, which means going into lower and lower situations and finding divine potential in those situations. So it means that it's the fact that the world gets progressively lower means that we're succeeding in doing our work, we've been succeeding in doing our job, and therefore we're ready to process and develop the potential of an even lower situation. They, unfortunately, because they don't have this, don't have the teachings of Pnimius HaTorah, inner dimension of Torah. So they're just simply reacting to what they see as a danger and as a threat. And the fact that we do have the material means to live that way today, so since they see the world as a threat to them, and as rather than as a mission, and as a divine mission and obligation, they see it as a threat and a danger. So they choose to hide out and stay away from the world. But that's the wrong thing.
Okay, ask another question.
Sure.
So let's say somebody wakes up, you know, from this cold situation, and somehow he gets a sikha in his hand, and he says, the gula is here. The avoda of being mizbara of the world is over. Kashmak, I have another reason why I could sit in kolo. Now I don't have to go out into the world to refine it. It's already done.
Well, that's a very good question. So it's true that this critique, this criticism of that lifestyle would seemingly be only appropriate as long as there is birurim left to do. The world has to be dealt with and elevated and refined. So you could say you can't hide out, you have to go out into the world. And but if you're saying that the world is already finished, the world is already complete, and you're supposed to start living like in the times of Gula, and in the times of Gula, the pursuit of knowledge of God will be the exclusive study of Torah will be the exclusive activity of that time. So it would seem that the right thing to do would be to drop everything and sit and learn and call. The answer to that is, however, that no. At this point, we're still not holding at that point yet, because we still are involved in the process of readying the world, or at least making the world cognizant and aware of its own readiness. And in order for Gula, and in order to do that, we still have to be involved in and with the world. In order to prepare the world, or make the world aware of its own preparedness, in order to be able to proceed to the next stage of actual redemption, we still have to be out there dealing with and in the world. But there is no question that on a deeper level, the fact that they are living this way is a reflection of the fact that we are that much closer to redemption. It's just a distortion of, it's a distorted symptom of the fact that we're closer to redemption. And in fact, what's very fascinating is that in many of these schools of thought, they will warn again, in other words, if you say that the main occupation, Rambam says the main occupation of Jews in the times of the redemption will be the pursuit of the knowledge of God. In many of these schools, they will discourage the pursuit of the knowledge of God. And they will say that you should only be engaged in the study of knowing the laws and the commandments that God gave to us, and to purposely and intentionally avoid the study of God. They actively discourage the pursuit of the knowledge of God.
You mean Kabbalah and Chassidus?
Meaning Kabbalah and Chassidus. As the, you know, the statement which I know of two different statements of different Rosh Hashivas which express this the best. One Rosh Hashiva was quoted as saying, of such a type of school, was quoted as saying, in this yeshiva we don't talk about God because this is not a Baal Tshuva yeshiva. In other words, that in the Lithuanian world of study, the mentioning God is only necessary in a Baal Tshuva yeshiva, where you're trying to introduce the those who have no background to Judaism. But once they get inside and they're already involved in the real thing, they no longer need to be involved in any learning or discussion about God. They should be focused on more important things, like an oxen gores a cow, who foots the bill. So, which is obviously extremely important, because God wants you to study these things and He wants you to know them. But their significance and importance is in the context of the relationship with God. So, another statement that I know from a different Rosh Yeshiva, of a Lithuanian style yeshiva, was where an individual who was actually at the time the study partner of that Rosh Yeshiva was secretly arranging in the school a Tanya Shir, a class in Tanya. And when this was discovered, the Rosh Hashiva was understandably quite upset, and he felt extremely betrayed. I gave you such special attention, and I brought you so close, and I learned it personally. How can you do this to me? And he says, like, why not? He says, what do you think I'm doing it for? I'm doing it because it increases my fear of heaven. I feel that I can serve God better. And what do you think I'm doing it for? To hurt you? To make trouble? I'm doing it because I feel that it gives me a great understanding and awareness of God, and I could serve Him better. So he says, what's your problem with that? What's your problem with Chassidus? And the person was like a lot of loss for words, and finally, this Rosh Hashiva finally said that the difference between us and Chabad is that you talk about God and we talk about Torah. In other words, to him, those are two mutually exclusive subjects. There's this discussion, there's the subject of God, and this is the subject of Torah, and never shall the twain meet. which is what the which is the problem with that style of learning in the first place. So, so to say that the lifestyle they choose to live is because they want to live. They're adopting a Geula style, developing a Geula style society. I don't think so. But again, like everything else, there is. The fact is, even when people get things wrong, there is some element of truth. There is some element of right. I mean, it's the fact that such a thing is even possible today is a symptom of the fact that we are actually that close to the redemption. The fact that we have the means, and it's humanly possible that literally thousands of people should be living such a kind of lifestyle and being fully supported, that itself is a symptom of the fact that we are holding in that place. It doesn't mean that it is the right, correct lifestyle. It just means that it's a sign that we're holding there.
I mean, it says there are three inyanim that the Yidden and Mitzrayim kept, and because of that they were zeicha for the Geulas Mitzrayim. They didn't change their language, they didn't change their clothes, they didn't change their, what was the third one?
Names.
I mean, also you see on another extreme, in Williamsburg, for example, there's another way of removing yourself from the world. You know, you're speaking about the Litvisha style, even though that they dress and they talk more American. But then there's another, as far as clothes, language and everything else, they don't identify in any way as being American.
That's awesome.
But
when it comes to business, when it comes to business, they're very American. They know the ropes.
But according
to the way around,
there's three things they didn't change. L'chior, that's a milo.
No, in other words, the idea is that even as we go to a place and we adopt its customs, and we adopt its mannerisms and behaviors, but at the same time we remain distinct and different. There are things that set us apart, and the things that are supposed to set us apart, we're not supposed to actually become like them. We're supposed to be enough involved in their way of life that we could utilize their way of life to serve God. But our mission is to serve God. Our mission is not to become like them. Our mission is to serve God and elevate them, meaning the people whose country we're living amongst, to elevate them to becoming to being godly. Certainly, the idea is not that we should lower ourselves. The only reason why we're lowering ourselves or coming down to their level is only in order to elevate them. So, anyway, this is basically the difference between actually becoming part of a place and living within a place and living a Torah lifestyle within that place and being part of its culture and customs, as opposed to influencing a place from outside or only in a manner of passing through. Naisif Lazer, in addition to this, Kum Durch Dem Zu and Dem Teke V'Atzlocha von der Rabbi. In addition to the fact that qualitatively it's a higher form of elevation and refinement, but it also increases in the force and success of the work. The impact is greater and the success is greater. V'fashtandik b'pashtus. As understood on the most simple level, the tam afti chaluki m'hagim al p'tere bei medina l'medina is salib the speziella eigenschaften von der medina, t'chunas ha'makam, t'chunas anshi ha'makam, v'yetzim. According to Torah, what is the basis of the fact that different countries behave in different ways? Why do people have different countries have different cultures? Why do different countries have different behaviors and different rules of manners and conduct? And the answer is because the different people, because each place has different characteristics, and the people of each place has different characteristics. As the Torah teaches us, that when Moshe Rabbeinu sent the spies to check out the land, so one of the things he sent to check out the land, that there's different kinds of lands. There are lands that produce powerful people, And there are lands that produce weakly people. Because each land has, the land has different characteristics. And the people who populate that area have different characteristics. Today, in the mad rush of political correctness and the trying to proclaim that all men are created equal, so for some reason, this concept of equality, one of the things that we're asked to do in order to accept the notion of equality is to try to is to disregard that which is obvious to any thinking being, that different peoples from different countries have different characteristics. It's very natural, it's very obvious, it's very, it's not, that different people have different characteristics, have different strengths, and different weaknesses, and different personalities. But since we're all trying to pretend that everyone is equal, equal meaning homogeneous blobs, that which with no distinguishing features or characteristics, so we pretend that all people in all places are the same. But this, of course, is nonsense. So the fact is that so the reason why there are different customs are symptomatic of the fact that different places and different peoples have different characteristics, and therefore they conduct themselves differently. And therefore, when one conducts oneself according to the customs of that place, which these customs are more fitting for the characteristics of this place, therefore the work that you're trying to accomplish is more successful. When you're part of that culture and you're working within the customs and behaviors and you're functioning according to the characteristics of that place, then you're going to be more successful. Therefore, a Jew who finds himself in a certain place has to conduct himself according to the